This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 13th of March 2026. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated 12th of March 2026. Your readers today are Jill Russell.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Land for a New Hospital Purchased by NHS Trust, Buses set to simply be dumped in regeneration, and monument to be restored over the next 4 months. So we start with the first headline story.
Land for a new hospital purchased by NHS Trust. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust have purchased a plot of land for a potential new hospital. The Trust has purchased land at Junction 7 of the M3, south of Basingstoke, to keep open the possibility of building a new hospital at the site in the future. Hampshire's new hospital is in Wave 3 of the National New Hospital Programme, with construction of a new hospital expected to begin between 2037 and 2039. It would mean the downgrading of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to lose its A&E department and consultant-led maternity unit. Sue Harriman, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, said, "Whilst no decision has been made on the location of a new hospital, by purchasing the land now, we are taking steps to ensure that we are in the best possible position for the future. We continue to face challenges. Our population is ageing, is changing, our buildings are ageing, and there is still a need to address issues around the sustainability of our services for the future. With a new hospital not on the immediate horizon, we are working with our partners to look at how we provide services to meet current and future population needs and plan responsibly for the years ahead." The land was acquired using ring-fenced funding from the National New Hospital Programme. Securing the site now helps the Trust avoid future cost increases or the risk of the land becoming unavailable. For the foreseeable future, the land will continue to be farmed. In the meantime, the Trust is focusing on maintaining and upgrading existing buildings to ensure they remain safe and suitable for patients and staff. The Trust emphasised that the land purchase is a forward-looking measure and does not commit it to building at the site. If the location is later deemed unsuitable or unnecessary for a new hospital, the land can be sold without further financial cost to the loss to the Trust.
Buses set to simply be dumped in regeneration. Buses will simply be dumped into Silver Hill and Broadway. Those are the words of one critic of the latest plans for the Central Winchester regeneration, known in previous attempts as Silver Hill. The latest plans, drawn up by development consortium Jigsaw by Partnerships and Place, will see the closure of Winchester bus station at the bottom of the High Street. In an update to Winchester City Council, Jigsaw has said it will take a holistic approach to the bus movements across the city centre. The issue will be discussed at the Cabinet Regeneration Committee on Monday, March the 16th. The removal of the bus station has drawn criticism. Phil Gagg from Winchester Action on Climate Crisis, WINAC, said that it is a regrettable element of the scheme. He said, "WINAC believe it is a real problem that the plans for Central Winchester regeneration are being developed in isolation. They need to be linked closely to plans for the Winchester movement strategy and for the station approach. Current plans seem to assume that buses will simply be dumped into Silver Hill and Broadway, adding noise and pollution whilst they idle between trips, are difficult to find, and clutter up what should be beautiful areas for shopping and recreation. Mr. Gagg said that the buses could be reorganised around a bus spine from the railway station to City Bridge, providing better connections. He added that the Winchester Movement strategy could be worked to open Jury Street and St. George's Street to two-way buses and cycling to ease congestion. He also said that good frequent public transport could reduce the need to drive into Winchester and remove the current traffic congestion. Conservative group leader Councillor Caroline Horrill was also critical. She said, "Back in 2018, we had a huge commitment to keeping the bus station. And if you look at places like Bath, they have kept their bus station. It is doable. And at that time, residents wanted a bus station and they wanted facilities there. However, we know that the operators are not keen on a bus station and the plans do not support it. I think we are assuming that the on-street solution is the only solution, but I'm not sure that for bus users that is an ideal outcome." Councillor Horrill also criticised how long the plans were taking to bring to completion, saying that it feels like we are in treacle at the moment. As previously reported, the new plans for Central Winchester regeneration call for the creation of approximately 250 new homes and 6,000 square feet of commercial space, as well as accessible public space and the improvement of pedestrian and cycle routes. They will also see the 1950s Coitbury House and 1970s King's Walk retained after initial plans included their demolition. Jigsaw has been approached for comfort. No, for comment. Beg your pardon.
Monuments to be restored over the next 4 months. Restoration work is cracking on after scaffolding was erected around the Buttercross Monument in Winchester High Street. After years of negotiations with heritage authorities, the City Council has been given the go-ahead for the restoration of the medieval market cross. Councillor John Tippett Cooper told the Town Forum on Monday evening, "I'm very pleased the scaffolding is now up and the restoration work has started. It will be good to see the Buttercross restored to what it should be, a centrepiece of Winchester city centre and our heritage." The cross is Grade 2 listed and dates from the 15th century. The aim of the restoration is to preserve as much of the original cane stone as possible and also restore some of the pieces that have been knocked off or removed over the years. Information boards will be displayed on the fencing to tell passers-by what is happening. The delicate work is expected to last for 16 to 18 weeks. As well as restoration, there will be careful cleaning to remove moss, ingrained dirt and heavy staining from pigeons. Humane pigeon deterrents, such as optical gel trays and similar measures, will also be installed.
That concludes the headline stories and we continue with the death announcements. Crawley. Elizabeth Crawley, known as Beth, on the 25th of February, aged 91. Edwards. Simon David Edwards, on the 27th of January, aged 61. Fisher. Joseph Timothy Fisher, known as Joe, on the 13th of February, aged 88. Gillingham, Marlene Gillingham, at Winchester Hospice on the 24th of February, aged 84. Hall, Denise Hall, on the 18th of February, at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 56. Linton, Anne Margaret Linton, known as Annie, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 27th of February, aged 70. Mason, Vera Mason, aged 78. She was formerly of Winchester but died at Magor in Monmouthshire. Patterson, Mary Grace Patterson, at home in Winchester on the 16th of February, aged 101. Williams, Avril Williams, née Dunkerley, on the 16th of December, 2025, at Brendon, St Giles View, aged 94. And now we have Christian comment.
Lent is well underway. The Christian calendar's 6+ weeks of preparation for Easter. The Gospel reading for last Sunday, the third Sunday of Lent, was the story of the Samaritan woman at the well. It's not as famous or iconic as some of the great Gospel stories, the Good Samaritan, the Prodigal Son, but it is wonderful, memorable, compelling, and haunting. It's from the book of John, and it's not a parable, but a real event from Jesus' life, and a rare moment of two people together talking. For once, Christ is not surrounded by his entourage or taking on the Pharisees. He is sitting by a well, alone, as his disciples have gone to get food. The woman comes to draw water. She is a Samaritan and not a Jew. It was a big deal. The two societies were neighbours but had nothing to do with each other. That's why it's so important in the story of the Good Samaritan. He shows himself as better than the Jews, who despise him. When Jesus asks her to pull up some water from the well and give him a drink of water, she says, "You are a Jew and you ask me, a Samaritan, for a drink." They sit and chat. Then follows one of my favourite moments in the Gospels. "Go and call your husband," said Jesus to her, "and come back here." The woman answered, "I have no husband." He said to her, "You are right to say, 'I have no husband,' for although you have had five, the one you have now is not your husband. You spoke the truth there." "I see you are a prophet, sir," said the woman. It's such a human exchange, and funny, and it makes something clear. Jesus has not come only for his own people or for good, sinless people. In Jewish terms, she is unclean and a heretic. He explains his mission to this random person. We never even find out her name, who, by the standards of time, might be seen as immoral. But she was interested, and she listened, and she helped a stranger. The Gospel doesn't spell out that she gave him water, but surely she must have done. And so he shared with her, of all people, some would have said, the magnificence of his mission, bringing living water. "Anyone who drinks the water that I shall give will never be thirsty again. The water that I shall give will turn into a spring inside him, welling up to eternal life." It's a beautiful passage and a beautiful idea. As important an idea now as it was 2,000 years ago. Back then, water in a desert land came from a well. Now we are lucky to have it on hand. But still, "you will never be thirsty again" is quite the promise. Lent can sometimes feel like a slog, hard work. We get fed up with waiting. How wonderful to have this simple and inspiring story in the middle of it, to give us hope and make us see that the future is worth waiting for. Written by Moira Redmond.
Next we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. We've just 8 letters this week. Some of them are very short and some of them are much longer. And we'll start off with one of the longer letters.
Real human need, and this letter is from Nick Woodford. He's the Communications and Community Engagement Manager, Hope Church, Middlebrook Street. Recent coverage has suggested that Winchester's streets are becoming too dangerous because of people begging in the city centre, Chronicle Online March the 3rd and Newsprint March the 5th. It's understandable that some residents feel uncomfortable when they are approached for money, but it's important that we look carefully at what is actually happening in our city. What we are seeing on our streets is not a surge in criminality, but the visible reality of people struggling with homelessness, addiction, mental health challenges, and rising living costs. These problems cannot simply be moved on. When people fall through the cracks, they often end up in the most visible places in a city, outside shops, near bus stops, or along busy streets. For some residents, this can feel uncomfortable or intimidating, but the people sitting there are not statistics or nuisances, they are individuals in crisis. As the Daily Mail noted, Winchester sits in a region where housing is among the least affordable in the country, with average house prices now well above 600,000, it should not surprise us that some people are being pushed to the margins. The question for a city like ours is not simply how we reduce visible poverty, but how we support people who are struggling. Across Winchester, there are many people quietly doing the work of support and relationship. Charities, churches, outreach teams and volunteers are spending time with those who are struggling, helping people access food, warmth, housing support and community. Jill, who has been volunteering at Hope Street Cafe, an outreach programme run by Hope Church Winchester, since 2010, said, "This is not new. For more than 16 years, we've seen firsthand the need to support people living on the margins in Winchester. Many who come through our doors are simply looking for someone to listen to them. And over the years, we've seen lives turned around, with some former guests now volunteering with us. Homelessness is rarely a choice. Often it's the result of difficult circumstances and people struggling to see a way forward. Sometimes the simplest things, remembering someone's name, offering a smile or taking time to listen, remind people they are not invisible. Spaces like this matter because real change rarely begins with enforcement. It begins with relationships. Public spaces protection orders and other measures can sometimes play a role in addressing antisocial behaviour, particularly when people feel threatened, but they are not a cure for homelessness. If someone has nowhere to live and no support network, a fine or enforcement notice does little to change their circumstances. What ultimately changes lives is patient, consistent support, helping someone access a loving community, housing, addiction recovery, mental health care, or employment. That work is rarely quick or visible, but it is the work that can lead to lasting change." That was said by Tim Blaber, senior pastor at Hope Church. Winchester has always been known for its strong sense of community. From volunteers running food banks and night shelters to outreach workers walking the streets, there are many people committed to making sure those who fall on hard times are not forgotten. It is right that residents want their city centre to feel safe and welcoming, but it is also possible to hold that concern alongside compassion for those who are struggling. The people sitting on our streets are not the problem to be solved. They are neighbours who need support. If Winchester wants to remain the kind of city it prides itself on being, the answer will not be found simply in pushing people out of sight. It will be found in continuing to invest in the relationships, services, and community initiatives that help people rebuild their lives. That work is already happening across our city. The question is whether we choose to see it, support it, and be part of it. Nick Woodford wrote that. He's the Communications and Community Engagement Manager, Hope Church, Middlebrook Street.
This letter from Roger Stevens is entitled Deterrence. Claire Grange's letter, Paying to Park, Chronicle, February the 19th, illustrates yet another example of app mad. The children who design and specify the systems we are compelled to use daily are all app mad. Their eyes are good enough to read the tiny script on that tiny screen in the few seconds that elapse before the phone switches itself off, and their fingers can operate that tiny, critically limited keypad. Now fading eyesight and arthritic fingers all but exclude many of us from partaking in banking, entertainment, and shopping activities. My bank is systematically reducing the capability of its laptop desktop interface to force me onto its app. Even the NHS, which you would think would know better, uses text rather than email whenever it can and expects us to fumble around on that tiny screen and keypad to respond to its various questions. Will it ever dawn on the retail industry that a situation is developing where older people do not spend their money because they can't? True, some are cash-strapped, but many of us can still afford to buy a round or two of drinks and would do more shopping if it wasn't such an ordeal. Alas, the children of the retail industry regard anyone over 60 as a ghost of yesteryear, and ghosts obviously have no money to spend, so we are ignored. The app generation is the future, so no doubt in the next great leap of progress, our credit and debit cards will be abolished, and we'll all be forced to use an app on our phones to pay for things. Then high street shopping will become even more of an ordeal for us, and we will endeavour to do even less. Incidentally, using an app to prepay for parking compels us to predict how long we will be shopping. So we just rush round to visit the shops we'd planned, but don't have time to browse the goods there or visit any other places that catch our eye. The result? A stressful visit and less money spent in the shops. And that letter was from Roger Stevens, Cliffway in Compton.
A letter headed A New Council from Jerry Adamson. Last year, the Winchester City Council has conducted a 7-week survey with the aim to seek views of its residents on a possible creation of a new, quote, parish council for unparished areas of a town to replace an existing one. On March the 9th, the council has produced and published on its website a breakdown of responses and draft recommendations for consideration by the Licensing and Regulation Committee. As expected, a team behind these recommendations is dreaming to establish a one new parish council to represent the currently unparished wards of Winchester Town and to incorporate it into the area, situated west of Courtney Road. The council justifies this dream by declaring that 86% of respondents living in the unparished town area agree with the creation of a new parish council. However, the council is reluctant to convert such a high percentage into an actual number and to present it as a number of people who support a creation of a new bureaucratic body. According to January's report by the Public Perspective, who has analysed these responses. A number of residents living in unparished areas who took part in the survey was only 526. Given that these 86% represents just 452 people out of 28,650 of registered electorate, a legitimacy of a new parish council will become an issue should a matter be brought for a judicial review. And that letter is from Gerry Adamson of Firmstone Road, Winnell.
Road funding, writes Nick Ray. That's W-R-A-Y. Leaving aside arguments for and against traffic and pedestrian improvements around Fordington Road, Fordington Avenue and Cheriton Road, etc., Chronicle Letters, March the 5th, I'm curious how these are to be funded. Councillor Nick Adams-King, in the same edition of the Chronicle, cites the massive underfunding of local government across the UK and states that it would cost £600 million to bring Hampshire's road network up to scratch. Yet Hampshire has a roads budget of one-tenth of this, £60 million, to do such work. So, irrespective of any local Winchester or countrywide road plans, are we actually on a financial road to nowhere with these or any other discussions? So writes Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter from Richard Hall is entitled Curse of the Lights. I have a question for the utility companies. When are you going to stop placing temporary traffic lights and digging up major roads within the Winchester area? It seems every week now that a new set of lights appears to cause disruption and delay to those who are trying to go about their daily business. Life is difficult enough without being subject to this constant, ill-thought-out barrage of red lights. The area around Andover Road and Stony Lane seems to be a hotspot for such activities, and I note another 5 weeks of work is due to start here on March the 12th. Couple this with a planned set of three-way lights for Worthy Road on March the 16th, with no timescale shown, and we will soon not be able to move anywhere in this area without considerable delay. Why are these companies allowed to get away with causing so much annoyance, especially when a lot of the time no one seems to be carrying out any work? Having lived in the city for many years, I can safely say I've never seen so many roads being dug up as they are now. Let's hope the government brings in the lane rental schemes that have been proposed, as this may curb some of this inconsiderate activity that is affecting so many people's daily lives. I know what the response will be from some, in that it has to be done, etc., etc., but at present it seems constant and all in the same areas. Why can't there be some coordination among the parties involved to reduce the impact on residents? Or is that too much to ask? And that letter was from Richard Hall, King Alfred Place in Hyde, Winchester.
A letter from Paul McCulloch, FSA, on archaeology. As I am sure your readers will know, Hampshire's archaeological heritage is a rich and much valued part of our lives, shaping our past, present and future, whether on the downland, in the river valleys or in our towns and villages. It is therefore profoundly disappointing to learn that the county archaeologist for Hampshire is being made redundant with no plans to replace them. This is a very regrettable step on the part of the County Council and will impact effective stewardship of the heritage within the development process and could put that heritage at risk. The County Archaeologist performs a vital role in protecting our heritage in all its forms through the National Planning Framework, advising planners at county and district level on the need for measures designed to protect our heritage, and supporting other initiatives, including landscape designations, agri-environment schemes and public engagement across the county and within the South Downs and New Forest National Parks. Having worked as an archaeologist in Hampshire for 35 years, I know how important the county archaeologist's role has been in providing a responsible and measured approach to the protection of our past from needless loss. What's particularly galling is that Hampshire was a pioneering local authority in establishing the County Archaeology Service in recognition of the wealth of Hampshire's archaeological heritage. That heritage hasn't gone anywhere, but its protection for us all and all who follow us has now been severely diminished. From Paul McCulloch, FSA of Parchment Street in Winchester.
This next letter, brief one, is entitled WTNAGN, and it's from me. John Richards.
The very same.
All listeners, friends and volunteers of Winchester Talking Newspaper are invited to attend the Winchester Talking Newspaper 2026 AGM on Thursday, May the 21st at 2 p.m. at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall, the Hallway, Littleton. The guest speaker will be Keith Hatter. Keith is a WTN listener. His talk will be about accessing the visual arts for those with sight loss. It'll be followed by afternoon tea.
Splendid.
That's from John Richards, Chairman, Winchester Talking Newspaper, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Memories of a Time Long Gone, and it's from Nigel Sacre. Mike Sherwood's letter, Winchester Not a Patch on the Winchester of My Youth, set me thinking of my youth in the city, where I lived from birth until my mid-twenties, Chronicle, February the 19th. I am of the same generation as Mike, with whom I worked at the Kremlin, that's the county council offices at Elizabeth II Court, in the late 1960s. The list of shops I knew in Winchester, now regrettably long gone, is fairly extensive. A few that do spring to mind are Whitwam's in the Upper High Street, a real music shop selling musical instruments, sheet music, records, which you could listen to before buying, and latterly, hi-fi. S.J. Hancock in Drury Street for electrical goods and hi-fi, the source of my first tape recorder and hi-fi system and our home's first rented TV. Woolworths, with its pneumatic tubes rattling payments in capsules upstairs to the accounts department. Winchester Cycle and Motor Company in Drury Street, offering a large selection of toys, model kits and even motorbikes. Sheriff and Ward and Plumber Roddis in the High Street General Department Stores, and the Ladies and Gents Outfitters, opposite to the bus cross, J. Emmons. Grace Brothers' establishment of TVs, Are You Being Served, could have been model on it. As an aside, it hasn't occurred to me before that shops and businesses in the city at times, over a number of decades, provided employment for my mum and dad and five of their children, including me. Not many families can claim that history, nor will they be able to in future, I guess. Clearly, Winchester is not as it was in my youth, or Mike's, which we may regret. However, while the pace of life in the city is certainly different now, I wonder whether it was any less frenetic then. And that letter was from Nigel Sacre, Magnolia Close in Andover.
That concludes the letters. We now move on. We'll first of all have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by a letter from Westminster, and then that will in turn be followed by first person. So we start off with the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment.
The editorial comment this week is, bus station is needed, and this is why. Winchester has waited a generation to see a credible future for Silver Hill, now rebadged as Central Winchester Regeneration, and the latest emerging plans will shape how this city works for decades. They deserve a cooler head than the rows which disfigured earlier schemes. but also a sharper eye than the current thinking on buses suggests. For all the talk of integrating buses into the city, the decision in principle not to replace the bus station looks like a triumph of theory over lived reality. Consultants' diagrams show elegant strings of on-street stops along Friars Gate, Tanner Street and the Broadway, an Italian Renaissance vibe to some of the buildings, and insist extra walking time is a matter of seconds. Try telling that to an elderly shopper, a parent with buggies and bags, or a commuter sprinting for a connection in the rain. Other cities that have scrapped central bus stations have learned the hard way that dispersal can mean confusion, lost patronage and declining services. Winchester says it wants fewer cars and cleaner air. That only happens if buses are not just available, but obvious, comfortable and easy to use. A recognisable hub, even a compact modern version of a station, sends a simple message. This is where the buses are, this is how the city moves. Sacrificing that clarity for a little extra development land may prove a false economy. Set against this, the emerging intention to retain and reinvigorate King's Walk and Coitbury House is welcome. Not high architecture, but good, solid buildings, part of the grain of the city. Refurbishing them, rather than flattening everything in sight, hints at a more incremental Winchester, one that recognises character and adapts it.
Letter from Winchester this week is from Danny Chambers, who's the MP for Winchester. I'm fighting to keep the A&E at Royal Hampshire County Hospital open for the long term. Just last week, the government confirmed it is spending public money to purchase land near Basingstoke for a possible new hospital. A hospital that may not even be built at all, and if it is built, it won't be until the mid-2040s. Our community deserves a fully functioning hospital in Winchester, and not vague promises about new hospitals being built somewhere else decades from now. If ministers can find the money for speculative land purchases, they should certainly be able to invest in improving the hospitals patients and staff depend on today. After years of the Conservatives promising new hospitals that were never funded, Labour has now pushed those plans decades into the future. And whilst buying land for a hospital that may never be built raises serious questions about priorities, what's even more concerning is the continued lack of funding for the hospital we already rely on here in Winchester. In Parliament, I will keep pressing the government to guarantee funding for urgent improvements at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, so the incredible staff there can continue delivering the high-quality care our community deserves. Last month, I wrote about the communities across the Meon Valley coming together to demand action from Hampshire County Council to stop people driving off-road vehicles through stretches of the River Meon for fun, churning up the riverbed, damaging wildlife and degrading the ecosystem in the process. The Meon is not just any river. It is one of the UK's rare chalk streams, globally scarce habitats found in only a handful of places on Earth, and home to unique wildlife that depends on their clean, clear waters. Yet despite repeated calls for action, the Conservatives running Hampshire County Council have so far made excuse after excuse, claiming they lack the powers to stop it. In reality, by failing to act, they are effectively allowing ecological vandalism to continue in one of Hampshire's most precious natural environments. That is why I have now taken the issue directly to Westminster. I have secured a meeting with the Minister to get to the bottom of this and push for action. I will be asking the government to work with the County Council to ensure a traffic regulation order is finally put in place to stop vehicles entering the river and protect the Meon from further damage. Surrounding our precious rivers, we have beautiful countryside we need to protect too. I had great fun at the National Trust Hinton Ampner Estate helping to plant trees. Winchester Rotary members have been working on these tree planting campaigns for a long time, and they're on track to help the estate reach its target of creating a woodland of 100,000 trees by 2030. Finally, it was an honour to speak at the Winchester Books Festival launch event last week about the power of reading to spark imagination, broaden horizons, and open up opportunities for young people. Books don't just entertain, they play a fundamental role in social mobility by giving children the curiosity and confidence to imagine a bigger future. I was really pleased to see so many family events planned for the 2026 festival. Hearing from a favourite children's author or taking part in a workshop might be the moment that sparks a lifelong love of books. If there is anything I can help you with, please get in touch at, and this is his email address, danny.chambers.mp@parliament.uk. I'll read that again, all lowercase, danny.chambers.mp@parliament.uk.
And this week's first person is written by the editor of this august publication, Kimberly Barber, and it's entitled Need to Protect Journalists. You will reap the shame that you disperse. That was the message I received this week. No context, no explanation, just a sentence dropped into my inbox like a stone through a window. I'm not even sure who or what it was meant to be about. And disperse? Or was it dispense? But it got me thinking about this idea of shame and who really creates it. Because the shame journalists are accused of dispersing is not of our making. It is born of actions, not coverage. If a tree falls in a forest and no one hears it, has it still fallen? Of course it has. Journalism is the act of hearing it, recording it, and telling others it happened. The fall is the event. We simply bear witness. That's why the story reported by the BBC this week about abuse directed at journalists matters. A reporter, Joe McCann from Melksham News, confronted a full town council meeting after being sent a photo of a punch bag at the council building with a photo of his face stuck to it, with the words, "Punch me," written below. It was framed by some as a joke, a jape, something to laugh off. It wasn't funny, and it should not be, but tolerated. When intimidation and abuse are dismissed as banter, we slide dangerously close to normalising attempts to silence scrutiny. That is not a healthy place for any democracy to be. Mr. McCann told the BBC the behaviour needed to be called out because no journalist should face bullying or intimidation for simply doing their job. Good on him. For these are worrying times, all the more reason why journalism matters more than ever. People deserve to see justice being done, and being done correctly. Not dished out unfairly, not hidden, not twisted by rumour or power. A free press exists to hold those with influence to account, to stop the slow creep towards little, unchallenged dictatorships where no one asks awkward questions. I won't pretend it's always pleasant to find yourself in the newspaper, but necessity and comfort have never been the same thing. Somewhere along the line, a misinterpretation of GDPR and the echo chamber of social media algorithms, which encourage us to believe everything is about us, have combined to produce a belief that local newspapers don't have the right to publish names or details. we regularly refuse requests from people convicted of crimes to remove their names from reports. But lately these demands to be deleted or to have history erased or changed have started to become even more ridiculous. Recently, a man of the match asked us to remove his name from a football match report. Another business, after a fire that required emergency services at significant public cost and caused real alarm in the community, said it didn't want a story at all. Both requests miss the point. Local newspapers exist to accurately reflect what is happening in our communities. There are no laws against us writing your name or your business's name when it is part of the journalistic process. You are not that special. What is special and worth defending is the public's right to know what is happening where they live. And that was by Kimberly Barber.
Next, we have some What's On items. From now until Saturday, the 21st of March, the Flying Scotsman will be running on the Watercress Line. And then also on the Watercress Line, from Thursday the 2nd of April to Monday the 6th of April, the Easter Bunny Train will be running. On Saturday the 21st of March at New Hall, the Winchester Philharmonic Choir will be performing works by Vivaldi, Handel and Bach. On Thursday the 26th of March at the Theatre Royal, the folk singer Karen Dillon's live show, Coming Home. On Friday the 27th of March at Winchester Cathedral, Elgar's Dream of Gerontius, performed by the Wainfleet Singers.
Excellently.
On Sunday the 29th of March at the Theatre Royal, Katie Markham will be performing Someone Like You, the Adele songbook. On Friday and Monday, the 3rd and 6th of April, that's the Easter weekend, under the National Gardens Scheme, gardens in the village of Crawley will be open and there will be teas in the village hall. On Friday the 10th, from Friday the 10th of April to Saturday the 18th of April at the Chesil Theatre, we'll be presenting Ladies in Lavender, about two mature unmarried sisters disturbed by the unexpected appearance of a young man. And then on Saturday the 18th of April in Winchester Cathedral, the Full Tone Orchestra will be performing Holst's The Planets and John Williams' Star Wars Suite.
Gosh, how lovely.
Sunrise at the moment is around about 7:30 in the morning, and sunset is around about 5:30 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That's 01962 861229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Right, we now continue with further items of news.
This article is headed Volunteers Praised for Planting Project with National Trust. Winchester's MP joined with volunteers and National Trust staff to help plant trees as part of a project to create woodland. Danny Chambers helped plant hawthorn and blackthorn trees in the Hinton Ampner estate on Friday, March 6th. This helps the estate get closer to its target of creating a woodland of 100,000 trees by 2030. The organisation is doing this by both planting trees and allowing some to naturally regenerate across the site that was previously worked by Manor Farm and National Trust tenant Charlie Flint. Dr. Chambers said, "I've really enjoyed taking part. I love being outside and working in nature. Obviously, I'm from a farming background, and planting trees and hedges is something I've been doing my whole life, so I absolutely love it. I think it's so inspiring and exciting that local people get involved and be part of these nature restoration projects. because these trees we are planting today will be around longer than the rest of us, and you are leaving it for future generations. You are improving the landscape, the environment. It is important that people feel brought into these projects and understand what's happening, and they can feel involved as well. So that means everyone cares about it more. Also present was Councillor Jonathan Williams, Ward Councillor for Bishops Waltham. He said, "It is fantastic to see so many volunteers coming out. On the personal level, I work in an office all day in an old chalk quarry, so I hardly see the sunlight. So even though the rain has started, it's nice to be out in the open." The volunteers at the tree planting were a mix of Winchester Rotary members and other members of the public. Winchester Rotary President Mark Butcher, who helped to organise some of the volunteers, said, "I am so pleased and so amazed with how organised the National Trust team are. We just rock up and it's all ready to go. We do not need to bring any tools or items. We just get our assignments and away we go." Mark added that the majority of the volunteers had come from outside the Rotary Club, and added that patients from Friars Gate Surgery with mental health problems were also volunteering for the first time. Lee Hoolan, countryside manager for the Hinton Ampner Estate, said that the most recent round of planting means that the project is 5,000 to 6,000 trees away from reaching its planting goal. He said, "A huge thank you to everyone who has got involved. It is inspiring to see everyone get involved. We know it is beneficial for everyone's health and well-being."
This article has a dreadful headline. It's a truly remarkable effort with 17 victories. And the word truly is spelled C-H-E-W-L-Y. You'll see what it's about in a second. The champion of the World Watercress Eating Championships has vowed to defend the title he has held for 17 years. Glenn Walsh from Bishop Sutton has dominated the competition at the Alsford Watercress Festival for nearly two decades. Despite his long reign, he admits he doesn't even like the taste of watercress. Mr. Walsh said, "It's amazing for Alsford, bringing thousands of new people to the town, and it's always great fun for us who live here. Each year I question whether I'll take part in the eating competition, as I dread it and don't actually like watercress much, but then my competitive nature and the pressure take over. The World Watercress Eating Championship has become a firm favourite at the annual festival, which marks the beginning of the UK watercress season. The challenge is simple. Eat an 80 gram bag of watercress in the shortest time possible, with a bottle of water to help wash it down." Mr. Walsh said, "To me, watercress is a condiment, something to accompany your meal or add to a sandwich like mustard. You wouldn't eat a jar of mustard in one go. Eating a bag of watercress in one go really isn't right, and should be approached with caution." The 58-year-old credits his success to having his big hands, a big mouth, and a fiercely competitive spirit. His pre-competition routine includes little preparation except for a Guinness or two before and after the event. Though it may sound simple, eating watercress at speed is no easy feat, especially with the tough stalks. Mr. Walsh said he finds it amusing when newcomers underestimate the challenge, thinking it's just like eating lettuce quickly. Over the years, his completion times have ranged widely from a personal best of 25.5 seconds in 2022 to 58 seconds last year. The event draws participants from across the UK and beyond, and sometimes even sparks family rivalries. On one occasion, Mr. Walsh's triplet daughters and son all entered the competition, with daughter Ellen finishing a close second. He joked that he doesn't feel threatened and believes his children let him win to keep him happy. The whole family gets involved, with his children cheering him on and his wife Tracy providing sign language interpretation for the lively commentary. Asked if he has any advice for this year's competitors, Mr. Walsh said, "Well, I can't give away all my trade secrets. I would just say, enjoy it, forget your dignity and your manners, and just go for it."
Police chief responds to claims over city centre. Winchester's outgoing police chief says the force is getting on top of city centre crime. Chief Inspector Corinne Bishop outlined progress against crime. A big spike in robberies has been put down to a new way of classifying shoplifting. Previously, a thief who threatened shop staff or pushed past them had the crime listed as theft, but is now classified as robbery. Drug offences too have risen sharply, but because the police are being more proactive, says Chief Inspector Bishop. Domestic abuse and violence has climbed in the first three quarters of 24 to 25. Antisocial behaviour dropped in 2024 to 2025. Violence against the person in the first 9 months of 2024 to the same period in 2025 rose 1.8%. Sex offences dropped 9%. Robbery increased from 21 to 41. Drugs were up 26%. Overall, crimes in the first three quarters of 2024 to 25 rose by 2.6%. A report to the Scrutiny Committee said the overall rise reflects confidence and visibility and targeted enforcement, not simply more harm. Councillors raised a story in a national newspaper lifted from the Hampshire Chronicle about people reportedly being too scared to come into the city centre because of aggressive begging. Chief Inspector Bishop disagreed the city was intimidating, saying people were being supported and several offenders had received criminal behaviour orders banning them from the high street. Sandra Tuddenham, Council Neighbourhood Services and Community Safety Manager, said much ongoing work was being done over crime. "I would say we are in a good place at the moment." A Public Spaces Protection Order, PSPO, is on place to control street drinking. Ms. Tuddenham said the PSPO had changed the way street drinkers consume alcohol. "It was overt. Now it is hidden in a coffee cup or some other vessel, so it's not so obvious. If an officer asks them to stop drinking, they stop drinking. The alcohol can be confiscated, and people don't want that to happen." On drugs, a report to the Scrutiny Committee said the increase could be attributed to Winchester Policing Team, and in particular Winchester's Priority Crime Team, whose focus is to take a proactive approach to this crime type, creating a hostile environment for offenders and county lines dealers. Chief Inspector Bishop is leaving after 3 years to take up a new role at police headquarters in Netley. Her replacement is Matt Kirby. She said rural crime was also a priority, with recent funding for officers to work out of Bishops Waltham and Alsford. She told the City Council Scrutiny Committee on Wednesday, the 4th of March, that the police station at Bishops Waltham has just reopened. Also, a priority is crime in Winchester Prison. On domestic violence, Ms. Tuddenham said the rise reflected increased awareness and self-referrals to support services. "Although a terrible crime, it is a positive that people feel confident to come forward and ask for support and help."
Cathedral is looking to hit the right notes. Winchester Cathedral has launched a nationwide search for the next generation of boy choristers. The opportunity offers young singers aged 8 to 13 the chance to be part of a 900-year-old choral tradition and receive a world-class musical education. Chorister singing remains central to worship at Winchester Cathedral, whose boy choristers contribute to regular services, concerts, broadcasts and recordings, all while receiving expert musical training. The scheme is open to boys who simply love to sing and show natural musical talent. Choristers sing alongside experienced professional singers and, on occasions, earn the chance to perform with Winchester's girl choristers aged 11 to 18 at major Christian festivals. Andrew Lucas, interim director of music at Winchester Cathedral, said, "Becoming a chorister at Winchester Cathedral is about far more than musical excellence. It gives boys the chance to grow up with music as part of their everyday life, building their confidence, discipline and teamwork, while opening doors to life-changing opportunities they may never have imagined." He emphasised the importance of reaching out to new families and communities. Mr. Lucas said, "As fewer children encounter singing naturally in their daily lives, it is more important than ever that families know these pathways exist and are open to them. Every new chorister plays a vital role in keeping this ancient tradition alive, helping to ensure our legacy of choral worship continues to thrive for centuries to come. Entry to the programme is based on potential rather than prior training or background, and generous scholarships are available, along with means-tested bursaries to support wider access. The programme is run in partnership with the Pilgrim School. Headmaster Tim Butcher said, "At Pilgrims, we offer boys an exceptional education alongside the extraordinary choral opportunities. Our boys work hard and have a lot of fun. Choristers will be on the sports field covered in mud, and the next minute they will be singing in the world-famous cathedral. We are also the only double choir school in the country, not just educating the choristers, but also the quiristers who sing in the chapel at Winchester College. We see firsthand each day how music brings numerous benefits, helping to develop confident, happy, well-rounded boys who take joy in their learning. Crucially, music making that progresses to the highest level goes hand in hand with the formation of character and values that have both stood the test of time and that will prove of utmost importance in an AI world. For those interested in finding out more, open mornings will be held at the Pilgrim School on Saturday, March the 14th and Saturday, May the 16th.
Almost 150 council homes secured on housing site. Winchester City Council has secured almost 150 council homes on the King's Barton site, the council leader has confirmed. Councillor Martin Todd, Lib Dem for St Paul, said that the first council tenants have moved into their homes on the site and commended council officers for making sure the homes were of the right quality. Speaking at full council on Thursday, February the 26th, Councillor Todd said, "Winchester City Council has exchanged contracts with the developer of King's Barton for 146 homes in total in the autumn of last year. The first homes are now occupied and the remainder will be offered to those on our waiting list over the next 3 years. I had the good fortune to go and visit some of the houses. They are built to a high standard. They are spacious and they have air source heat pumps keeping them warm. They are built to a higher standard than one would fear for such a large-scale development of that size, which is a tribute to the office that has worked to identify the housing and make sure the right quality is brought forward." Councillor Todd made his comments in a response to a question from Councillor Jane Rutter, Lib Dem for the Worthies, who asked how the plans to bring on board new council homes in King's Barton is proceeding. Councillor Rutter asked a follow-up question, saying, "Given that in all surveys on satisfaction, Winchester City Council comes out as the preferred provider of social and affordable homes, how many more of the remaining affordable homes for the King's Barton development do we hope to provide as new council homes?" Councillor Todd admitted that he could not answer the question. He said, "That is a very good question for which I don't have a full answer. There are the 146 we have talked about. I do know that our new homes team maintains continuous discussions with developers to find opportunities for new social housing to come forward through this route, and I'm sure it'll be evaluated on the same basis as any other development in the district. But I'm not in a position to say how many or whether there will be any beyond the 146 on the development looking into the future at this stage.
Interfaith Meal brings people together in unity. People from different faiths came together to celebrate unity over a shared meal. On Tuesday, March the 3rd, an educational iftar was held at Winchester Cathedral's Pavilion Refectory, organised by the Basingstoke Dialogue Society. The event welcomed attendees including civic leaders, the Bishop of Winchester and the Interim Dean of Winchester. Ramadan and Lent overlapped this year, a rare occurrence that will not happen again until 2057. The Right Reverend Philip Mount Stephen, Bishop of Winchester, said, "In a sadly divided world, it seems to me that it is very important that we should sit down and eat together. Doing so doesn't mean we agree about everything, but it is a symbol of our common humanity and our commitment to listen to one another and build not only mutual understanding, but mutual respect. Few things seem to be more important today than today's world." The iftar meal, which breaks the daily Ramadan fast, was held in a spirit of gratitude, generosity and togetherness.
Big brains make £1,500 charity gains. More than £1,500 has been raised for charity thanks to a quiz night. The event was organised by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Achwal, and took place at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall on Saturday, February the 28th. It was hosted by Kevin Ashman, the renowned quizzing champion and star of the TV show Eggheads, who is widely regarded as one of the world's best professional quiz players. Councillor Achwal said, "Kevin was an excellent host. It was a full capacity crowd and the quiz was entertaining and informative. It was fun to be there and it was also very educational. Plus, we raised more than £1,500, which is brilliant. People were very generous." The annual event is a popular highlight of the Winchester social calendar and sold out once again. Teams of eight competed through a series of challenging questions, with the Hideaways team emerging victorious. Attendees also took part in a raffle to help boost the funds raised on the night. The money will go towards the Mayor's chosen charities. These include Trinity Winchester, which supports people experiencing homelessness and social exclusion, Home Start Winchester, which assists families with young children, and Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, WINAC, an environmental charity. All three charities have confirmed that they will benefit from this year's mayoral fundraising events.
Drugs stats up, but it's better policing. Drug offences in the Winchester area are up, but police say that shows more effective policing. Councillors heard that reflects. Hang on. Councillor heard that reflects officers being more proactive across the district, rather than a surge in drug use. In the first three quarters of 2025, compared to the same period in 2024, offences were up from 287 to 382. A rise of 95, or 33%. The issue was raised at the scrutiny committee, and a report by local police commander Corrine Bishop said the 33.1% increase in drug offences is a positive indicator of proactive policing. Winchester's priority crime team has intensified enforcement through warrants, stop search activity and county lines disruption. The Boomtown Festival every year on the Matterley Estate accounts for a big chunk of the offending. Chief Inspector Bishop added, "Alongside this, we have maintained focused nighttime economy, that's NTE, patrols, working closely with licensed premises to address illegal drug use at the earliest opportunity. The annual Boomtown Festival generates a predictable and planned uplift in recorded crime, primarily in drug-related detections. The increase is expected and reflects proactive policing. During Boomtown, policing teams implement an intensive pre-planned operation, including enhanced searching at gates, targeted patrols, and intelligence-led interventions. This results in a deliberate rise in recorded drug possession offences, particularly at ingress points. Festival policing now includes strengthened systems for on-site reporting, safeguarding, and evidence capture. The improved capability means more incidents are formally recorded rather than resolved informally by event staff. This drives numbers up in a positive way, ensuring transparency and accurate crime data. Boomtown does not increase year-round local harm. Recorded offences linked to the event are largely self-contained and time-limited, with no sustained increase in community-level drug activity, violence, or antisocial behaviour during the wider reporting period.
New £2.2 million pavilion set to open. Construction work on the new River Park Sports Pavilion is expected to be completed soon. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Healthy Communities, said that the site should be handed over to the Council in April, in time to open in the summer. She updated the project to full Council. "This project is one that we can agree we are successfully delivering. Construction is almost complete on this new £2.2 million sports pavilion at River Park. We have indications that the handover will take place in early April and we will be able to have a soft opening later in the month. The new pavilion will support cricket, rugby, park runs and other sports at River Park. It will also be available for the community to hire for other events."
Care Home celebrates its silver anniversary. A quarter of a century of dedicated community care has been celebrated at a Winchester care home. Residents and team members at Colton Care's Abbots Barton staged an afternoon party to mark the Worthy Road home's 25th anniversary. Among the guests were families, residents' friends, community contacts and former members of staff. Welcoming everyone, home manager Dee Lovewell, who has given 2 decades service herself, said Abbots Barton had cared for 1,872 residents over the past 25 years. "It is they, together with all the people who work here, who have put the heart into this home," she said. 2 original staff members from the opening in 2001, waitress Mandy Merritt and senior night nurse Mark Hinton, remain at the home 25 years on and shared in the opportunity to reminisce. Hosts and guests tucked into a cream tea, celebration cake and glasses of fizz, listening and dancing along to music from singer Victoria McCabe. Guest of honour, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Achwell, gave a speech thanking the home for its contribution and support to those in the Winchester community. Abbots Barton resident Jessica Whitbread said, "This truly is a brilliant place. Everything I need, I've got right here, and such lovely people. This is my home now." The party was an opportunity to raise funds for Abbots Barton's chosen charity for this year, Winchester Hospice, by holding a raffle with a food hamper as the prize. Dee added, "The whole afternoon was filled with smiles and laughter. The atmosphere was buzzing and everyone had a fantastic, memorable time. When we opened in early 2001, Abbots Barton heralded new standards in older people's care locally, including dedicated nursing care. Today, we continue to offer that opportunity for refined living with the peace of mind that comes from knowing nurse-led care is there for you day and night. Here's to the next 25 years.
Vineyard and farm team up. A vineyard and a flower farm are teaming up to offer a fresh way to celebrate. Alsford-based Candover Brook, known for its English sparkling wines, has partnered with Flower Farm Stem and Green to create a thoughtful gift for Mother's Day, or as some of us would prefer to call it, Mothering Sunday. Customers who purchase a bottle of Candover Brook Brut or Rosé at selected stockists or online will receive a packet of hand-picked sweet rocket seeds, Hesperes metronalis, grown in Hampshire and chosen for their fragrant evening scent and symbolic meaning of Evening of the Mother. Amanda Sinclair, head of sales and marketing at Candover Brook, said, "Working with Stem and Green has been a real joy. We share the same values, a love of the land, a commitment to regenerative growing, and a belief that the best gifts are ones that keep on giving." After the wonderful response to our recent Valentine's collaboration, it felt completely natural to build on that and create something equally meaningful for Mothering Sunday. The seeds, grown by Stem and Green at its Hampshire farm, are a lasting reminder of the day, offering something that will bloom each year long after the wine has been enjoyed. The collaboration is part of a wider trend among Hampshire producers to work together in promoting sustainability and celebrating the region's craftsmanship. Both Candover Brook and Stem and Green prioritise regenerative practices that support soil health, seasonal cycles and their local communities.
Poetry competitions back with a £1,000 prize. Poets around the world are invited to submit their unpublished work for a chance to win a major prize. The Winchester Poetry Prize returns for another year with a top award of £1,000 for the winning poem, along with the opportunity to be published in the competition's printed anthology. Run by the Winchester Poetry Festival, the competition is open to poets at all stages of their careers and seeks to highlight outstanding work from across the globe. Julia Copus, award-winning writer and this year's judge, said, "Poems begin in attentiveness, to language, to experience, but most of all to those moments when, as Adam Zaglowski wrote, the things of the world vibrate with mysterious meanings, revealing more than we thought we knew. In a distracted age, that kind of attention is a gift, even an act of resistance. Trust what compels you." It's an honour to be judging this year's Winchester Poetry Prize, and I look forward to encountering whatever it is, large or small, momentous or apparently ordinary, that has held your attention long enough to become a poem. The competition awards £1,000 to the winner, with second and third prizes of £500 and £250 respectively. Poets based in Hampshire are also automatically considered for the Catherine Beavis Prize, which celebrates the life and work of the late Hampshire poet, educator and founder of the Writing School Online. The 2026 winner will receive £150 and a year-long programme of writing tuition. All long-listed poets will be invited to read their work at a prize-giving ceremony in Winchester during the festival, and their poems will be published in the official anthology. The 2025 prize received 2,284 entries from 34 different countries.
homelessness risk for young people is increasing. The number of young people at risk of homelessness in Winchester has seen a sharp increase, with new research from Centrepoint showing a 44% rise within a year. In 2024 to 25, 65 young people in Winchester experienced homelessness, compared to 45 the previous year. Charity Centrepoint's research sought to identify the number of young people who sought help from the council due to homelessness or the risk of becoming homeless. These figures were revealed through Freedom of Information requests directed at Winchester City Council. A separate Freedom of Information FOI request made by the Chronicle in January reported that 78 young people approached Winchester City Council in 2025 seeking help due to their risk of homelessness. Throughout the UK, a total of 123,934 young individuals found themselves in similar plights, approaching their councils for assistance due to homelessness or the risk of it in 2024 to 2025.
Councillors' green light to new multi-use games area. Winchester City Council is investing a six-figure sum on a major upgrade in play provision for youngsters in North Winchester. Councillors on the town forum have approved £110,000 on a multi-use games area in Week at St Martin's Field. And incidentally, later on in this article, the multi-use games area will be referred to as Moogar for short. Another £6,000 will pay for public consultation to ensure to Moogar matches what children wish to see, girls as well as boys. It is the latest step in the regeneration of sports provision in the city in recent years, including the new Sport and Leisure Centre at Bar End, the new pavilion at King George V in Highcliffe, and the nearly completed pavilion at River Park. The Moogar, which has widespread public support, will replace a tarmac area with a single basketball hoop. The money comes from the CIL fund, or Community Infrastructure Levy, collected from developers. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for the Climate and Nature Emergency, said the aim was to make the Moogar safe, inclusive and welcoming for all youngsters. Councillor Johnny Morris, Lib Dem Member for St Barnabas Ward, said St Martin's Field was little known by many people and asked how the council publicised the Moogar. Councillor Learney said, "It is hidden away, which is why it's underused," but added word of mouth, social media and press publicity would ensure the Moogar would be popular. The aim is to have it open in spring next year. Deputy Mayor Councillor Jamie Scott, Lib Dem for St Luke Ward, welcomed the £110,000 investment. "This is really good news. It shows we are showing good interest in young people. But consultation is key. I remember the disappointment at the Stanmore Moogar. It was too small. It needed to be longer and wider. But the skate park at Summers Close, the consultation was better." Councillor Scott said Winchester used to be well provided with youth facilities, citing the Carroll Youth Centre in Stanmore, the King Alfred Boys Club in Middlebrook Street, and the YMCA in Week. "The Carroll is now a general community centre. The KABC has morphed into Unit 12 in Winnell, and the YMCA has been demolished. This Moogar will be a great facility in Week and be used by others. It shouldn't be a turf war thing with people saying this is ours. It will be used by all." Councillor James Batho, Lib Dem member for St Barnabas Ward, praised the campaigning work of Emma Back of Winchester Sport and Leisure Trust and Week resident Tim Perry.
Festival finds its stride. The latest Winchester Books Festival has officially launched with an event at the Arc. This year's event, taking place from April the 17th to the 19th, is the fourth one since it was launched by Sophie Liardet and Sean Searles in 2023. Speaking at the launch of the 2026 event on Wednesday, March the 4th, Sophie and Sean thanked their sponsors and supporters for their help in establishing and running the festival. Sophie said, "For those of you who've been with us from the start, you'll know that every year we say putting the festival together feels like a white-knuckle ride. This year has had its roller coaster moments too, but we genuinely feel we are finding our stride. We are creating what Sean and I always envisaged, an annual celebration of authors, ideas and storytelling, accessible to everyone, bringing stories worth sharing to Winchester. It's an event people are beginning to anticipate, and without popular one-off events, in addition to our April Main Festival, we can now bring top authors to Winchester all year round. Last year, we welcomed Ben McIntyre, David Nichols, Andrew Child, who writes the Jack Reacher books, and the completely amazing Dame Mary Berry. All of these were sell-out one-off events." Sean added, "The festival thrives on community support. We want everyone to know about it, so please help us spread the word. Sign up to our newsletter, follow us on social media, and tell your friends. Creating something new is hard, but it's the community that makes it worthwhile. You are at the heart of it." Attendees at the launch also heard from Winchester MP Danny Chambers, who expressed his joy at the festival, as well as his concerns with failing literacy rates across the UK. He said, "I'm so pleased that we have the Winchester Books Festival here every year. We cannot underestimate the huge amount of work it takes to make it happen. I'm pleased that this year the theme for the festival is social mobility, something we've discussed for many a year. We know that a child who reads for pleasure does better at school." Dr. Chambers continued, saying that books can help children to imagine new worlds and possibilities for themselves. He said, "I hope that when a child opens a book, they also open a door, because that is where social mobility can thrive." More information about the Winchester Books Festival and the events that are taking place this year can be found on the festival's website.
Young cow is a stick in the mud. Firefighters from Winchester helped rescue a young cow trapped in mud. An on-call crew from Liphook was joined at the scene in Borden by Overton and Winchester animal rescue teams at around 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, March the 7th. Using specialist equipment, the teams safely freed the Hereford Cross cow. The cow was handed back over to her owner before crews returned to their stations shortly after 5 p.m. A spokesman for Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service said, "Specialist rescue equipment, including strops, were used to pull and lift the young Hereford Cross cow to safety. The animal was handed back to her owners." And this is accompanied by a photograph showing a rather dejected, muddy cow surrounded by the firefighters. No. But anyway, all's well that ends well.
Indeed.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Jill Russell.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also listen to Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.